Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for joining us for a night of ultra-left fun and frivolity. This hour is being sponsored by Bump in Ballamer. Bump. I love that. Bump writes, thank you, Mike, for all the years of truth-seeking. This goes out to all truth-seekers everywhere, and especially to a beautiful one whose birthday is today. Happy birthday, Melinda. Shine on, you crazy peanut. I love you. Bump in Baltimore. Ow! All right. Thanks, Bump. That's great. I like that. I don't know which one I like better, Bump or Crazy Peanut. That's cool. Happy birthday, Crazy Peanut, or Melinda. So I guess you heard the Christian Lord is telling the Republicans way in advance how much he holds them in contempt. Did you hear about the right now tropical storm, but soon to be hurricane heading for the Republican National Convention in Tampa? Did you hear about that? It's coming. It's coming. Oh, my goodness. I guess these folks just can't seem to get their mind around the fact that they're not very liked by their own supreme being. I don't wish any problems on Tampa, not a bit. But wouldn't it be ironic? More Republican idiocy. I guess you know of this half-witted freak Republican, Steve King, Republican from Iowa. You know, it's not enough that the other one, Todd Akin, made such an ass of himself. King, weighing in on the controversy swirling around his friend and fellow caveman. King was he was on a radio program, and he said he supports the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. Ooh! It would ban federal funding of abortions except in cases of forcible rape. Right now, Medicaid also covers abortions for victims of statutory rape and incest. Statutory rape and incest. For example, a 12-year-old who gets pregnant by a family member or not. And this half-witted king, Steve King of Iowa, says he's not aware of any young victims like that. He said on the radio, quote, well, I just haven't heard of that being a circumstance that's been brought to me in any personal way, and I'd be open to discussion about that subject matter, end quote. The subject matter is statutory rape or incest. He's never heard of it. A 12-year-old who gets pregnant, he's never heard of it. Now, there's an obvious setup for me to get really gross and nasty with that kind of a statement, but I won't, in respect to our possibly younger listeners who might be tuned in. King was on KMEG radio. But potentially more controversial, according to Talking Points memo, for Steve King is his suggestion that pregnancies from statutory rape or incest don't exist or happen rarely, to the point where, I don't know, I've never heard of that, it's never been brought to me in any personal way. What do you need to have happen, Steve King? Do you need a 12-year-old in your family to be raped and impregnated? Is that what you mean when you say it's a circumstance that's never been brought to you in any personal way? What are you talking about? None of this is exactly a surprise. But a 1996 review by the Guttmacher Institute found, quote, at least half of all babies born to minor women are fathered by adult men. That, Steve, is statutory rape, unless they're married. Minor women. It varies from state to state, I guess. A lot of it happens with the Mormons. And you know what? Steve King will get millions of votes in Iowa. This is the Republican who likes to compare immigrants to cattle and dogs. And he recently defended the blood sport of dog fighting. Steve King. Todd Akin, Mitt Romney, Ryan, these are your Republicans. Choke on them, bastards. Big deal. I think it was yesterday. Bastion of racism and sexism and a bunch of white male scum at Augusta National Golf Course over here, not far from the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, has decided to stop embarrassing itself and admit women as members. New York Times, and I want to compare and contrast for you here. New York Times reports it this way. What a year this has been for women breaking barriers. This is New York Times getting kind of ironic, maybe a little sarcastic. Aung San Suu Kyi took a seat in Myanmar's parliament. Saudi Arabia, Brunei, and Qatar let women compete on their Olympic teams for the first time. And now another bastion of male authority and rigorous devotion to antiquated laws has heeded the call to equality. Yes, indeed. The Augusta National Golf Club has admitted two women, Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State, and Darla Moore, a South Carolina business executive. Not exactly radical choices, but welcome nonetheless. Blah, 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 blah. Now keep in mind, Augusta National added its first black member in 1990. A man, of course. So there you go. That's how the New York Times on the editorial page trumpeted this. But I'll tell you what, let's switch over to Dave Zirin, writing for Nation Online. He says, please forgive me if I don't join the chorus of cheers about this. Condoleezza Rice and Ms. Moore are not 21st century Jackie Robinsons, and their acceptance into this bastion of exclusion has nothing to do with women's liberation and is utterly disconnected from the reality of daily life for millions of American women. Condi Rice is a symbol of female power. Only if by power we mean the power to put thousands of Iraqi women in graves, all in the name of a war based on lies that she actually promoted. Then there are the birth defects suffered by the children of women in Iraq. In 2009, The Guardian reported that doctors in Fallujah were dealing with up to 15 times as many chronic deformities in infants compared to a year ago, and a spike in early life cancers that is probably linked to toxic materials left over from guess who? A hospital spokesman told the Interpress Service, quote, in 2004, the Americans tested all kinds of chemicals and explosive devices on us, thermobaric weapons, white phosphorus, depleted uranium. We have all been laboratory rats for them. There was also, under Rice's watch, 19,000 reported sexual assaults of women combat troops in the U.S. Armed Forces every single year. A female soldier in Iraq was more likely to be attacked by a fellow soldier than killed by military fire. And what did Condoleezza Rice do about it? Not a goddamn thing.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So the two new members at the Augusta National Golf Club breaking the gender barrier is Condoleezza Rice, who is a war criminal who should be awaiting trial in The Hague, not teeing up to play golf in her green jacket. As for the other new member, Darla Moore, all I have, she's a banking billionaire who lives on a South Carolina plantation that's been in her family for seven generations. According to Dave Zirin at Nation Online, she's a longtime friend of the Bush family. 10 years ago, when asked about becoming the club's first female member, she said, quote, "I'm as progressive as they come, but some things ought not to be messed with." I don't know anything about Darla Moore. She may be the woman who was fired by Nikki Haley from the board of University of South Carolina. As a matter of, well, hold on here. I just got an email from Lib in South Carolina. Darla Moore was the largest contributor to University of South Carolina, sat on the board of directors till Governor Nikki Haley removed her from that post for no reason other than she's a liberal. Really? Okay, well, I don't know. I don't know anything about her. If she's a billionaire, I wish she would have stuck some money in Air America. Or this program. Oh, no, 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 never mind. Anyway, Dave Zirin concludes, the only way this club, the Augusta National Golf Club, could be any kind of symbol of progress and justice is if the people of Augusta, Georgia, a whopping 32% of whom live below the U.S. poverty line, took to the 18th green and occupied the Masters. Let's see whose side Condi Rice and Darla Moore would be on then. Yeah, Augusta, except for, isn't that where Medical College of Georgia is, Kathy? Augusta, Georgia. Except for that university. Oh, and it's also where, who was it? James Brown. Should I tell him our James Brown story? We were on an Augusta radio station several years ago when I was on Hear America. And I was just screeching and screaming and doing my, you know, phony Christian attacks and talking about lying conservatives and yada, yada, yada. Well, it turned out that James Brown, who lived in Augusta, didn't like what I was doing. So he went to the radio station where that carried my program and bought it. The radio station bought it and then immediately took me off the air. He bought the time on it. That's right. He didn't buy the station. He bought blocks of time just to get us off the program. And then he died. Do 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 do. Ow! I feel good. Do 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 do. Ain't got no Malloy now. Ain't got nothing now. I be gone, sucker. Oh, yeah. Fired by James Brown, but I did one of those imprecatory prayers, and well, you know, stuff happens, right? Ah! my God. What else we got? Oh, when we come back after the break, not yet. We're going to recap Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks thing, statement by Michael Moore and Oliver Stone. Just to recap for you, after the program the other night, it was interesting. Both Michael in Roswell and Sergeant Doom, who I believe is still in South Florida, sent me a synopsis of the Julian Assange thing. And you need to hear this. You really do. Because some of the stuff in here I was totally unaware of. And I'm supposed to be informed. But when I share this with you, when we come back after this break, I think you'll understand fully, at least I do now, fully, why the governments of Sweden, the United States, and the United Kingdom are just goddamn determined to get their hands on Julian Assange. And I will guarantee you something else. If they ever do, if either of those three countries get him, the U.S., the U.K., or Sweden, Julian Assange will disappear. And then there'll be a notice someplace that he had a car wreck or a heart attack or fell through the ice or was struck by lightning. The U.S., the U.K., and Sweden want this man dead. They don't give a goddamn how he dies. They want him dead. Not jailed. Dead. So I'll share this with you when we come back after the break. Stick around.
Can't depend on the goodly hearted. Goodly hearted mainland shapes and soul. Can't depend on the sacrament. No Father, no Holy Ghost. You can't depend on any churches unless there's real estate that you want to buy. Can't depend on a lot of things. Need a busload of faith to get by. What? Busload of faith to get by. Busload of faith to get by. Busload of faith to get by. Busload of faith to get by.
Passion. She's rubbing up the world.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, from Michael Moore and Oliver Stone, we have spent our careers as filmmakers making the case that the news media in the United States often fail to inform Americans about the uglier actions of our own government. We therefore have been deeply grateful for the accomplishments of WikiLeaks and applaud Ecuador's decision to grant diplomatic asylum to its founder, Julian Assange, who is now living in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Ecuador has acted in accordance with important principles of international human rights. Indeed, nothing could demonstrate the appropriateness of Ecuador's action more than the British government's threat to violate a sacrosanct principle of diplomatic relations and invade the embassy to arrest Mr. Assange. Since WikiLeaks' founding, it has revealed the collateral murder footage that shows the seemingly indiscriminate killing of Baghdad civilians by United States Apache attack helicopter. Further fine-grained detail about the true face of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, United States collusion with Yemen's dictatorship to conceal our responsibility for bombing strikes there, the Obama administration's pressure on other nations not to prosecute Bush-era officials for torture, and much more. Predictably, the response from those who would prefer that Americans remain in the dark has been ferocious. Top elected leaders from both parties have called Mr. Assange a high-tech terrorist. And Senator Dianne Feinstein, the California Democrat who leads the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, has demanded that he be prosecuted under the Espionage Act. Most Americans, Britons, and Swedes are unaware that Sweden has not formally charged Mr. Assange with any crime. Rather, it has issued a warrant for his arrest to question him about allegations of sexual assault in 2010. All such allegations must be thoroughly investigated before Mr. Assange moves to a country that might put him beyond the reach of the Swedish justice system. But it is the British and Swedish governments that stand in the way of an investigation, not Mr. Assange. Swedish authorities have traveled to other countries to conduct interrogations when needed, and the WikiLeaks founder has made clear his willingness to be questioned in London. Moreover, the Ecuadorian government made a direct offer to Sweden to allow Mr. Assange to be interviewed within Ecuador's embassy. In both instances, Sweden refused. Mr. Assange has also committed to traveling to Sweden immediately if the Swedish government pledges that it will not extradite him to the United States. Swedish officials have shown no interest in exploring this proposal, and Foreign Minister Carl Bildt recently told a legal advisor to Mr. Assange and WikiLeaks unequivocally that Sweden would not make such a pledge. The British government would also have the right under the relevant treaty to prevent Mr. Assange's extradition to the United States from Sweden, but has also refused to pledge that it would use this power. Ecuador's attempts to facilitate that arrangement with both governments were rejected. Taken together, the British and Swedish government's actions suggest to us that their real agenda is to get Mr. Assange to Sweden. Because of treaty and other considerations, he probably would be more easily extradited from there to the United States to face charges. Mr. Assange has every reason to fear such an outcome. The Justice Department recently confirmed that it was continuing to investigate WikiLeaks with just disclosed Australian government documents from this past February state that, quote, the U.S. investigation into possible criminal conduct by Mr. Assange has been ongoing for more than a year, end quote. WikiLeaks itself has published emails from Stratfor, a private intelligence corporation, which state that a grand jury has already returned a sealed indictment of Mr. Assange. And history indicates Sweden would buckle to any pressure from the United States to hand over Mr. Assange. In 2001, the Swedish government delivered two Egyptians seeking asylum to the CIA, which rendered them to the Mubarak regime, which tortured them. If Mr. Assange is extradited to the United States, the consequences will reverberate for years around the world. Mr. Assange is not an American citizen, and none of his actions have taken place on American soil. If the United States can prosecute a journalist in these circumstances, the governments of Russia or China could, by the same logic, demand that foreign reporters anywhere on earth be extradited for violating their laws. The setting of such a precedent should deeply concern everyone, admirers of WikiLeaks or not. We urge the people of Britain and Sweden to demand that their governments answer some basic questions. Why did the Swedish authorities refuse to question Mr. Assange in London? And why can neither government promise that Mr. Assange will not be extradited to the United States? The citizens of Britain and Sweden have a rare opportunity to make a stand for free speech on behalf of the entire globe. A statement published in the New York Times today by Michael Moore and Oliver Stone. Now, I have more, and I hope this doesn't make you dizzy, but I think it's important. Originally, WikiLeaks' Julian Assange fled Iceland. That's where he was when everything was released, as he was under surveillance by so-called business-suited strangers. Plus, he was tipped off by the bank where the WikiLeaks account was located that they had been approached by U.S. government personnel. This is in Iceland. In Sweden, Assange was immediately approached by a Bonnier family publication for exclusive rights in publishing WikiLeaks documents. Assange declined their offer, both against the principle of exclusivity and because he'd been advised that the publication was similar to Rupert Murdoch's British tabloids, not necessarily respectable. It is important to understand that the Bonnier family is a major European median family whose ownership extends to American publications such as Sports Illustrated, Popular Science, Time, etc. The woman who first approached Assange for consensual sex, Anna Arden, worked for one of the Bonnier family publications, and while her present source of income is difficult to determine, she appears to be surviving nicely. Miss Arden would later approach the second young woman, Sophia Weiland, who also had consensual sex with Assange, to accompany her to the police. The law firm, which volunteered to represent the two women, is comprised of two law partners, Kleist Borgstrom, who has two sisters who work for Bonnier Family Companies, and Thomas Bodstrom, who publishes through the Bonnier Family Media Company. Bodstrom was also the Swedish Minister of Justice who had okayed the CIA's illegal kidnapping of several Swedish citizens of Arabic origin, also called extreme rendition, who were then transported to Egypt for torture and what could have led to murder, but were eventually released and sued the Swedish government in Swedish courts, winning a financial judgment against them. Sweden claims it would never allow extradition to any country with a legalized death penalty. Yet by allowing extreme rendition to such countries, we know this to be a lie. Originally, when the two women approached the police, a junior prosecutor on duty ordered Assange to remain in Sweden. But the Swedish prosecution authority dropped all charges, as they had no merit. Later, after allowing Assange to leave Sweden, and due to political pressure from the highest levels of government, the Swedish prosecution authority resumed the case without merit, seeking Assange's extradition solely for questioning, in violation of both existing Swedish law and the regulations pertaining to issuing European Union arrest warrants. During those early events in Sweden, Anna Arden, one of the women accusers, had chat message traffic with reporters for a Bonnier family tabloid, Expressen, which indicated criminal conspiracy and malfeasance on her part. And while her attorney, Kleist Borgstrom, illegally directed her to delete this evidence, she forgot to delete the copy from her blog site, later downloaded by an enterprising Australian journalist. Unfortunately, this has received scant attention or reportage in the corporate media. Later, the other law partner and former justice minister, Thomas Bodstrom, went on a book tour in America where he routinely spread disinformation about the WikiLeaks Assange case. Much of the time, Bodstrom stayed at a residence in Virginia, a short drive from the CIA's headquarters in Langley, Virginia. The present Justice Minister, Beatrice Ask, who resurrected the extradition case against Assange, was originally appointed to her cabinet position by Carl Bildt, the former Swedish Prime Minister, who is presently the Swedish Foreign Minister. Carl Bildt appears unfavorably mentioned in several WikiLeaks cables and was a director at Lundlen Petroleum during their involvement in massacres of Sudanese living on oil-rich land in that African country. Quite a bunch of improbable connections pertaining to a strange case of consensual sex.
Right inside the night, I'm waiting for the light. Seems like I'm in the middle. Working for something that I can't touch and sometimes can't even believe in. Oh, oh. Cradled by the hands of fate, the fate that sometimes wraps around.
Do not go.
go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So that was from Sergeant Doom after the piece by Michael Moore and the other director. Now from now from Michael in Roswell. Listening to last night's podcast, it's worth remembering the sequence of events of Assange's travails. Here's kind of a synopsis. WikiLeaks published Leak U.S. cables in a video constituting damning evidence of the incidental murder in 2007 by U.S. helicopter gunship of two Reuters journalists. Reuters had repeatedly asked for specifics of the event, and the U.S. had continued to ignore Reuters or to claim that there was no information available. Two women in suburban Stockholm who vaguely know each other, one of whom has some tangential relationship to the CIA, go to the police and file a complaint against Assange and tell their stories to a notorious right-wing weekly newspaper in Stockholm. The police ask Assange to come in for questioning. He does so voluntarily. Police question him and release him without charges. The U.S. government pressures various credit card and online payment firms to decertify WikiLeaks as a client in an attempt to cut off its source of funding. Assange goes to London. A Swedish prosecutor, not a judge, issues an extradition request and warrant for Assange, even though there are still no charges, and even though one of the women left Sweden for Israel sometime before. Interpol issues a red notice for Assange. This classification is normally reserved for indicted war criminals on the run or terrorists. The UK begins extradition, and Assange lawyers gain a hearing while Assange is placed under house arrest, eventually requiring a determination from the UK's High Court, during which his lawyers repeatedly show that the extradition to Sweden is politically motivated and will very likely result in further extradition to the US and incarceration in the US on politically motivated charges. The Justice Integrity Project writes a report stating that Karl Rove has acted as an advisor to the Swedish government. The Justice Integrity Project then writes that the Swedish law firm pressing for charges against Assange, Bergström and Bodström, is run by Thomas Bodström, a former Minister of Justice for Sweden. In his capacity as Minister of Justice, Bodström facilitated the CIA's kidnapping of an Egyptian national in violation of Swedish law, who was at the time seeking political asylum in Sweden. The Egyptian was returned to Egypt, where he was tortured, according to reports from various human rights groups. Reports in Sweden suggest ongoing ties between the country's foreign policy minister, Carl Bildt, and the CIA ever since the 70s. Rumors abound that there is a secret sealed indictment of Assange in the United States under the Espionage Act of 1917, even though that law has traditionally, and in practice, not applied to journalists or organizations engaged in journalism. The British High Court issues an extradition order, and Assange takes refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy. Ecuador grants Assange political asylum. Ecuador grants asylum after the Swedish government refuses to send prosecutors to interview Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy, although Sweden has done just that in other, much more serious cases. And Sweden further refuses to guarantee that Assange will not be further extradited to the U.S. for prosecution on politically motivated charges. The U.K. claims that it does not recognize diplomatic asylum and threatens Ecuador with invasion of its embassy, even though the U.K. is a signatory to a variety of international treaties on diplomatic missions, all of which affirm the sovereignty of missions in foreign countries. So, here we are at the present day, and the situation can be summed up as follows. A group dedicated to public information publishes damaging accounts about the United States' prosecution of the war in Iraq, along with embarrassing details of U.S. diplomatic coercion around the world. And its leader is then almost immediately embroiled in rape allegations in a country whose former and current public officials have long-standing connections to the CIA. Even though there is not enough evidence to issue an indictment on either a charge of rape or on any lesser charge. After protracted extradition hearings, a country allied with and subordinate to the United States in various wars and global financial skullduggery chooses to extradite that person, and when that effort fails because said person obtains political asylum from a third country, the subordinate country, the UK, threatens the entire framework of international diplomatic relations in order to retrieve and extradite a person who has committed no crime, has been charged with no crime on a warrant issued not by a judge. Is there any more evidence necessary to show that the United States government believes that it runs the world and that the UK and Sweden are its underlings? Michael in Roswell. This is just, it's madness. I mean, it's just total insanity. But if Julian Assange is ever returned or sent to the United States, he will be killed. He will be murdered. If he's ever sent to Sweden, he will be killed. He will be murdered. And you know goddamn good and well who the trigger man will be.
This is a referral.
It is 7 past the hour. I got one more email with you here one more email I want to share with you to show you this web that has been spun around.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
Each road that I walk down, 21 past the hour. Just got a email here from Tim in L.A. It's the It's from the Center for Responsive Politics, opensecrets.org. And it is politicians and elections, influence and lobbying, news and analysis, resources, blah, blah, blah. I have in front of me here the data that's available for News Corp, the Rupert Murdoch terror broadcast organization, and how much money they have contributed to political candidates. And then, of course, the breakdown of how much comes from individuals, how much from political action committees, how much goes to the Democrats, how much goes to the Republicans. We're going to post this at MikeMalloy.com later on this evening or tomorrow. But the leading recipient of money from News Corp, according to OpenSecrets.org of the Center for Responsive Politics, the number one recipient, of political contributions from News Corporation, Rupert Murdoch's organization, in this election cycle, is Barack Obama. $58,825. Second is Howard Berman, Democrat. Third is Ben Cardin, Democrat. Fourth is Henry Waxman, Democrat. Fifth is Amy Klobuchar, Democrat. Sixth is Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat. Seventh is Dianne Feinstein, Democrat. Eighth is Robert Menendez, Democrat. Ninth is Bob Corker, Republican. And 10th is Kristen Gillibrand, Democrat. Really? Really? So, the number one recipient of funds, according to OpenSecrets.org, funds from Rupert Murdoch's terror broadcast organization, is President Barack Obama. I know. You're still going to vote for him. Just like the people in Missouri, the Republicans are still going to vote for the moron out there who's gotten so much publicity in the past couple of days. Mr. Aiken. Does that not upset anybody listening? I mean, that Barack Obama, according to, I guess that's what this says. I mean, I'm trying to read it here, and it's pretty pretty straightforward. Go to opensecrets.org yourself and look under influence and lobbying. There's tabs at the top of the page. Click on that, and then you'll find News Corporation, all recipients that have received money this election cycle. And the nine of the top ten are Democrats, and number one is Barack Obama. Unless I'm reading this wrong. Am I reading this wrong? It says News Corp, : all recipients among federal candidates, 2012 cycle, total amount given, $504,162. So, I don't know, am I reading that right? Huh? Now, Now, I know a lot of people say, well, $58,000, that's nothing. That's lunch money for these political candidates. Yeah, right. That's right. It's nothing. It's nowhere near the $100 million that Sheldon Adelman, the soon-to-be-indicted or investigated or convicted or whatever freak who's decided to spend millions upon millions, tens of millions of dollars to get his way. His way. But it's still a surprise to me. It doesn't say here whether or not Barack Obama returned the money to Murdoch with a note that said, F you.
It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Patty Lockhart. Thank you, Patty. She is the executive director of Nurse Talk, LLC. They have a site, nursetalksite.com, nursetalksite.com. And her message, on behalf of the over 200,000 registered nurses represented by National Nurses United, that's their union, and Nurse Talk Radio, where laughter is the best medicine, we thank you, Mike, for your fearless voice. Check us out at nursetalksite.com or National Nurses United. .org. Things are just continuing to be bizarre, don't you think? It's hard to get away from the Julian Assange story, because this is kind of the line in the sand. You know, it really is. This is kind of the last ditch stand where it concerns the major English speaking countries, coupled with the major European countries, whether or not they go to global fascism and what that means for the rest of the world, or they remain at least titular democracies. It's like every single voice has to be shut off. Every single dissension has to be eliminated so that the Christian fundamentalists and the Muslim fundamentalists and the Orthodox Jewish fundamentalists can get on with their destruction of the world while the capitalists sit and watch and laugh and hoot and holler and encourage it and retreat into their dens at night where they can't be touched. Michael adds a P.S. It's worth mentioning that both lawyers involved in representing the two women who filed charges against Julian Assange. One of them tried to drop charges and then disappeared to Israel. But the lawyers representing the two women making accusations are both members. I've already told you this. That's right, I already told you this. Are both members of this social brotherhood movement, which is a Christian fundamentalist organization inside Sweden. It's not going to stop. And slowly but surely, every single voice of dissent is going to be shut off. One way or the other. And the thing that is just scary to me, I mean, it really is. It's just absolutely scary. I don't get scared. I'm way beyond scared. But this has me scared. I don't know if that's the right word. Concerned and deeply fearful for even the illusion of freedom, democracy. Last Friday, let me recap what Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa said in defending his decision to grant Julian Assange asylum. Correa said, and this is a translation, obviously, the fundamental factor for granting political asylum to Mr. Julian Assange was because there was no guarantee that he would not be extradited to a third country. Nothing to do with blocking the Swedish criminal investigation over the supposed crime. Nothing. It is not that I agree with everything that Julian Assange has done. But does he deserve the death penalty, life imprisonment, to be extradited to a third country for this? Please. What's the balance between the crime and the punishment, the offense and the punishment? What about due process? I want to point that out because they're already misrepresenting things. I look for when I said that the only thing that Julian Assange did was use his freedom of expression, etc. We aren't denying that he might have committed an offense, but he should be tried with due process. That was Correa last Friday. Scary stuff. I mean, when you have supposedly the two greatest democracies on earth, the UK, I'm sorry, Canada, I'm talking about war-making power and suppression of other people. You know, that's what the two greatest democracies on earth are all about, always have been. When you have the two greatest warlike democracies in the history of the human race, and the socialist government of Sweden. So you have these three, you know, two monstrous capitalist organization and a perverted socialist organization. And you have that power, that firepower, that political power, that destructive power aimed at one human being, Julian Assange. I mean, you would think, wouldn't you, that just the amount of focused energy on him right now would turn him into a little tiny cinder. Pew! Gone. I don't think there is any doubt what will happen to Julian Assange if the United States or the UK or Sweden ever gets their hands on him. In the meantime, you know, we have the newscasters in this country pissing all over themselves today because Condoleezza Rice got membership in the Augusta National Golf Club, a goddamn war criminal of the highest order. Compare Julian Assange's charges and Condoleezza Rice's record. So, no talk tonight on the newscast that I saw no talk all day long on any of the cable newscasts that, I click into and click out of as quickly as I possibly can. No talk at all about the reality of Condoleezza Rice, the war criminal, and Julian Assange, the freedom fighter, and the juxtaposition of, one of them having to seek political asylum inside an embassy someplace, and the other one putting on her green jacket and teeing up at Augusta National Golf Club, and everybody's just ecstatic that equality has finally arrived where the Masters is played. Oh, my goodness, a war criminal, a murderess. Or is that too sexist? Okay. A murderer, a goddamn mass murderer who worked for one of the most criminal, if not the most criminal regimes ever in the history of this country. Okay, with the exception of the first several who committed mass genocide and perpetrated slavery on people who did nothing except be born inside black skin. I'm sorry. I keep forgetting that. You know, I have to go back and remind myself that the myth-making in this country is just that. Condoleezza Rice. Who's next? Dick Cheney? You ever heard of Dilbit? Do you know what Dilbit is? D-I-L-B-I-T. Dilbit. You want me to tell you what it is? I'll tell you what it is when we come back after this break. It's real poison. And it's going to be flowing underground here in the United States. Dilbit is short for diluted bitumen. Diluted bitumen. No, it's not dill weed. It's dill bit. All right, we'll be right back.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn.
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Patty Lockhart. Thank you, Patty. Her message on behalf of the over 200,000 registered nurses represented by National Nurses United, the union, and Nurse Talk Radio, where laughter is the best medicine. We thank you, Mike, for your fearless voice. Check us out at nursetalksite.com or nationalnursesunited.org. Patty Lockhart is the executive producer of Nurse Talk LLC. NurseTalkSite.com. Thanks, Patty. Check them out. I haven't heard that program yet. I'm going to have to, God knows I could use some laughter, couldn't you? I mean, I don't mean ironic laughter. Anyway, according to David Sassoon, who is a writer and also investigative journalist. What else does he do here? He's a publisher of Inside Climate News, which published the e-book, The Dilbit Disaster, Inside the Biggest Oil Spill You've Never Heard Of. All right. Every day, he writes, more than a million barrels of oil flow to refineries in the United States from Western Canada's oil sands region. Producers hope to quadruple that amount in the next decade, arguing that oil from a friendly neighbor will deliver an extra degree of national security. But this oil is no ordinary crude oil, and it carries with it risks that we're only beginning to understand. Its core ingredient, bitumen, is not pumped from wells, but is stripped mined or boiled loose underground. Industry insiders long considered bitumen to be a garbage crude, but now that the light sweet oil we covet has become more scarce and its price has skyrocketed, bitumen has become worth the trouble to recover. At room temperature, bitumen has the consistency of peanut butter, thick enough to hold in your hands. To get it through pipelines, liquid chemicals must be added to thin it into what is known as Dilbit, short for diluted bitumen. Last month, the National Transportation Safety Board issued a report that was harshly critical of the federal government's regulation and oversight of pipeline safety following a spill of more than 1 million gallons of Dilbit into the Kalamazoo River in Michigan in 2010. The accident underscored not only how different Dilbit is from conventional oil, but how unprepared we are for the impending flood of imports. Let me digress. I remember talking about that spill. I had no idea it was Dilbit. Did you? I never even heard the term until I read this piece by David Sassoon. He goes on, after the Dilbit gushed into the river, it began separating into its constituent parts. The heavy bitumen sank to the river bottom, leaving a mess that is still being cleaned up. Meanwhile, the chemical additives evaporated, creating a foul smell that lingered for days. People reported headaches, dizziness, nausea. No one could say with certainty what they should do. Federal officials at the scene didn't know until weeks later that the pipeline was carrying Dilbit, because federal law doesn't require pipeline operators to reveal that information. The 2010 spill could have been much worse if it had reached Lake Michigan, as authorities originally feared it might. Lake Michigan supplies drinking water to more than 12 million people. This close call hasn't deterred the energy industry from announcing plans to build or repurpose more than 10,000 miles of pipelines to carry Dilbit to the United States and global markets. This includes the controversial Canada to Texas Keystone XL pipeline, which will pass through the Oglala Aquifer, the nation's largest drinking water aquifer. It supplies drinking water for 8 states and about 30% of the groundwater used for irrigation. The nation's pipeline network was designed to handle conventional crude oil and is governed by laws and regulations that were written long before the unique risks and hazards associated with Dilbit began to emerge. In fact, Dilbit is exempt from an excise tax that pays for oil spill cleanups because the 1980 law that created the tax did not consider bitumen from the so-called tar sands to be crude oil. You can read this. Go to New York Times website. It's on the op-ed page today. David Sassoon. The title is Crude, Dirty, and Dangerous. After that spill, by the way, Congress passed new pipeline safety legislation, but it'll take years for its little tiny modest provisions to have any impact. The law that Congress passed during the Bush crime family years, it doesn't require pipeline companies to reveal whether their lines are shipping Dilbit or not. And while it does require a study of how Dilbit affects pipeline corrosion, the scientists conducting that study met for the first time only last month, and their work is not likely to be completed before new pipelines are built or old ones are diverted to carrying Dilbit. So, what? So nothing. Right? All right, coming up after the break, we are going to focus on... I'm going to go back to the Todd Akin thing, only from the standpoint of focusing on why he is going to continue in the race. He's not going to get out, and the chances are that he will defeat Claire McCaskill and become the senator from Missouri. Stick around. We'll be right back. Seven past the hour. You know, I don't want to. Continue to chew on this Todd Akin crap. I really don't. But this is so indicative. What Akin said. I mean, it's indicative of the mindset of every single member of the Republican Party, women and men, people who declare themselves to be Republicans or conservatives are making a secondary declaration that they are grossly ignorant and they're comfortable with their ignorance. And what makes them comfortable is that they know that when they or their candidates or their elected representatives make a statement like this. This is not a throwaway statement on Sunday that this moron made about women's bodies. This is not a throwaway. This is a deliberate, thought out, in his twisted little ignorant mind, statement based on his perception of females. And that perception covers the entire Republican Party, office holders, office seekers, voters. This is just how they think. And for that reason, I bring it up again this evening, brought it up earlier, bring it up again this hour. I think people, normal people, I'm not talking about conservatives, although sometimes people do escape from the conservative death lock on their minds, on their brains, on the way they live. But for the most part, they don't escape. So in my little world, I just write them off. They are beyond redemption. But I think it's important for normal people to understand what this Republican Party has become. I mean, they've always been twisted. They've always been 2 inches away from complete fascism. But here of late, say within the past 15, 20 years, and especially within the past 10 years, the Republican Party has become a party of religious fanatics and neo-fascists. And their religion is the type that condemns everybody but themselves. And this is what I'm trying to get at. Aiken issued a statement, an ad. See, this is how you communicate these days. He released an ad this morning apologizing for his comments about, you know, what he said about legitimate rape, or I can't even get my mind around that phrase, legitimate rape. But he said, I have a compassionate heart for the victims of sexual assault. I pray for them. The fact is, he went on, rape can lead to pregnancy. The truth is, rape has many victims. The mistake I made was in the words I said, not in the heart I hold. What? I ask you for your forgiveness. You know, I know to err is human, forgive is divine. I'm human. I'm nowhere near divine. Screw you, Aiken. What do you mean forgiveness? See, this is how these right-wing religious, Republican, neo-fascists squirm and slither and weasel out of every single thing they do. It doesn't matter if they crash the economic system. It doesn't make any difference if they lead us into immoral, illegal, violent, death-dealing war. It doesn't make any difference if they condemn women. It doesn't make any difference if they deny children the right to an education. These slimy, slithery bastards have their out. Oh, well, God has forgiven me. It doesn't make any difference what you say, Mr. Mike, or anybody. It doesn't make any difference how much damage I did. It doesn't make any difference how many people I killed, how many children I denied a meal, how many women suffered because of my legislation. None of that matters because I am forgiven. Oh, yeah? How do you know that? God told me. So you see how easy it is? That's the reason that I keep hammering on this point. I don't like to talk about religion. I've had employers in the past warn me not to. I have had business associates who have said, why do you talk about that stuff? You're just going to piss people off. Since I don't have a boss any longer, I'll talk about it as often as I like. But as far as pissing people off, I'm sorry. If hypocrisy, if pointing out hypocrisy and deceit and fraud based around this jive turkey nonsense religious hocus pocus causes people to be upset, good! That's the point! The point is to make you upset. I don't care if you're a believer or not a believer. If you can subscribe to religious dogma that is this perverse and perverted and sick, then somebody needs to point it out to you. I'll take that job. Your preacher isn't going to point it out to you. He's just going to continue to milk you. Oh, occasionally a preacher will have a sermon on hypocrisy, but he's not talking about members of his congregation. He's talking about Democrats, liberals. So, that's the reason that this is a repeating theme in this program. Aside from my own personal deep and abiding contempt for religious nonsense, and it is deep and it is abiding, to think that we have 7 billion people on this planet, 75 to 80% of whom will cut each other's throats and laugh while they bleed in order to satisfy their religious dictates. If that's something I'm supposed to celebrate, if that's something I'm supposed to be quiet about, it ain't going to happen, bro. It's just not going to happen. This is madness. This human race has been struggling to come up out of the slime for 3 million years, and this is as far as we've gotten? We still slaughter each other in the name of religion and God and the flag? I mean, patriotism is as sick as religion. What are you killing for? What are you dying for? to make your point about your God or the way your holy script is interpreted, the way your flag waves or your economic system is more powerful than his or hers. What kind of madness is this? So, that's why I talk about it. Aiken said yesterday his statement about pregnancy was incorrect and that he meant forcible rape instead of legitimate rape. What the hell? What's the difference, you dumb bastard? And this is the point. This is the point. Rape is rape. Now, he may be making a distinction. If somebody slips a woman drugs in her drink and she passes out, and then that man climbs on her and rapes her, I guess Aiken here would say, well, that's not forcible. So even in the apology, he doesn't have a clue of how far up his ass his head is. But it's not just Aiken. It's Ryan. It's Romney. It's every one of these religio-fascist freaks. I don't care if it's Islam, Judaism, Christianity, Mormonism. It doesn't make any difference. It is destructive when it's dragged out into the public forum and used as a way to set policy. It is destructive, and it needs to be excised as quickly as possible.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. The Todd Aiken thing again. I do want people to understand something, and not because I'm saying it. I don't make pronouncements on this program. I just share the same kind of wisdom and knowledge you already have if you're a normal person. If you're a right-winger, you don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I might as well be speaking in some ancient language. But Aiken's point of view is not... It wasn't formed in a vacuum. It was formed because he's a Republican, and he's an evangelical Christian, and a right-winger, and a neo-Nazi. That's where his view percolated, was put together. And that's what the people in Missouri want. That's what the Republicans want. They want this kind of stuff.
And what I was going to say about his little apology advertisement that I'm sure other folks caught this, but even if his little semantics about, well, I didn't mean legitimate rape, I meant forcible rape, the idea that he still thought that women possessed some sort of magical ovaries that shut down during a rape, I mean, he believes this. You've got a candidate who believes that a woman's body intuitively knows, warning, warning, bad sperm, don't ovulate, don't ovulate. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous.
Well, you understand it's not just this guy.
Exactly.
It's the Republican, it's
sure.
The Republican mindset.
Right. And apparently our little lady parts are so mysterious and frightening to all of them that they have to create these little myths about, you know,
this is why
super
it's,
eggs.
This is why it's kind of sort of necessary to have biology.
Yeah.
in high school,
right.
So that including human reproduction. I mean, you don't even have to go to human if they don't want to. They can go to mammal reproduction,
cats.
And then extrapolate.
Exactly. We dissected a cat, and you could clearly see all the little parts right there that fit together and how they worked. But to think that a woman's body somehow discriminates against certain forms of sperm, and the worst part is he claims a doctor told him this.
Yeah,
maybe
doctor.
It was like Dr. Seuss. I have no idea. I mean, who knows? It could have been like Dr. Lara's a doctor.
Right.
You know, so who knows what kind of doctor actually told him this, but it's a mystery. Maybe it was Dr. Frist, because as the caller last night pointed out, he once said that you could get AIDS from teardrops.
Right. You know, what is really funny to me also, continuing this a little bit longer until it hits my gag reflex again, is that the Republican vice presidential nominee, Paul Ryan, according to Huffington Post, called this dumbass Aiken and asked him to drop out of the race. Now, Huffington is quoting CBS News. So, The knee-jerk reaction might be, well, good for Paul Ryan. No. You don't understand. What Ryan is saying to Aiken is very simple. Look, brother, there's only room for a certain number of lying hypocrites, and the box is full. So you're gonna have to get out. I mean, Romney and I are lying our asses off across the United States. I mean, he's telling people that Obama is trying to gut the Welfare Reform Act, the TANF, so that people now all they have to do is call up the White House and say, send me my check. So there's only so many lying bastards that we feel, although the Republican voters will accept an endless supply of lying bastards and go vote for him. But listen, get out the race, Todd. And of course, Todd says, no thanks, Paul. I'm going to stay in the race, and I'll tell you why. And then Todd Aiken told him why. Immediately after all this stuff broke, Todd Aiken remained tied with Senator Claire McCaskill. Aiken, a matter of fact, it's been within the margin of error, but in a poll released last night by the Democratic firm Public Policy Polling, Democrat capital D, Aiken had 44%, McCaskill had 43%. Now, that's very little different from the same poll in May, when Aiken had 45%, Claire McCaskill had 44%. This new survey was conducted from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time. And while it found that 75% of Missouri voters thought that Aiken was inappropriate in his comments Sunday about legitimate rape, they still plan to vote along party lines. So you see what I'm talking about? You cannot educate. You cannot rescue these evangelical Christian neo-fascist right-wing Republican teabaggers. You can't do it. If Aiken would have stood up there with a uterus in a jar of formaldehyde and said, look, see, this is why rape's impossible, or some other ridiculous crap, Republicans in Missouri would still vote for him. So that's why he's not getting out of the race. Are you kidding? He may defeat Claire McCaskill.
Revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Okay. 25 before the hour. So, again, when Todd Akin makes the kind of outrageous anti-woman, anti-life, anti-common sense, anti-human statements as the ones he made last Sunday. And then the Republican Party controllers go a little bit ape poopy about it. That's because they're afraid. They don't disagree. I mean, Romney, the Mormon Church, disagree with that? Are you what? Paul Ryan disagree with it? Come on, Ryan and Akin co-sponsored legislation to deny women birth control. What they're afraid of, the Republican leadership, of course, is that normal people or the so-called independents are going to hear that and go, oh, well, I'm not going to vote for him. Not to worry, Ryan. Not to worry, Romney. Not to worry, Akin. You're dealing with the American public. You're dealing in Missouri. You're dealing with Christian neo-fascists who would cut Christ's head off and put it on a pike in a second if he approached one of their vile temples of nonsense. We all know this. So there is no net loss when one of these pigs says something like this. There's no loss here. And the evidence is in a poll taken Sunday night after the whole goddamn world heard about it. (laughs) 75% of the people polled in Missouri thought that Akin was, his comment was inappropriate. Is there a more weasel word than inappropriate? What the hell does that mean? But that 75% of them were still going to vote for him. How about that? And by the way, a Survey USA poll of 500 voters conducted the next day, Monday, found that 54% thought Akin should drop out after hearing audio of his comments. But the 55% did not believe his later assertion that he misspoke. A third of Republicans said Akin should exit the race. 67% of Republicans said, no, stay in the race, baby. We love you. Those goddamn women want to get out there and roll around on their backs and have sex. Well, there you go. 67% said, no, I'm going to still go vote for him. 75% in the previous poll, no, I'm going to vote for him. Yeah, I don't like what he said, but I don't care. You know, Jesus said we ought to forgive, so I forgive him. I forgive him already. He's forgiven. In the public policy polling, that's run by a Democratic capital D firm, only 6% of Republican women said they planned to vote for Claire McCaskill. 6%. 94% of Republican women in Missouri are going to vote for this pig. So, as far as Romney and Republican Party leadership and this miserable bastard, Paul Ryan, as far as all this, I mean, you know who's really upset about this? Normal people and media. The media love it because it gives them something else to chew on. They can't discuss Julian Assange. They can't discuss the political prisoner, Bradley Manning. They can't talk about any of that because their masters won't let them. On MSNBC, I don't care what goddamn channel it is, they are not allowed to talk about it. So something like this comes up, woohoo! It goes on for days. And it's pointless to discuss it. Nobody is, at the last minute, Todd Akin has until the 25th of September, which is what, Friday? Saturday? To decide whether or not to take his name off the ballot without suffering a fine by the state Republican committee or the state election board in Missouri, because then they have to go print the ballots again. Oh, yeah. I'm not saying he's not going to drop out, but if he does drop out, it'll be because he got a better offer. I don't think he's going to. Why should he? He's still supported by the majority of voters in Missouri. It's within the margin of error in these political polls, but that speaks volumes. And come November, when they all march into the booth, and their preachers have told them, well, now he's forgiven. God's forgiven him. Jesus forgave him. Don't forget, Jesus shed his blood and his guts and his intestines so that you all could act like this and be real pricks about everything and then stand up and go, oh, God forgives me. Because, you know, Jesus shed blood all over the Middle East. So you're all safe now. There's no punishment for this. There's no retribution. There's no political price to pay. There's nothing. You know, you get the entertainment, or we get the entertainment value of it all. Once media gets their hooks into it, it becomes entertainment. I was watching and getting breakfast for Molly this morning, so I'm watching Morning Joe on MSNBC. I'm watching poor, miserable, dumbass Joe Scarborough and his battered wife, Mika Brzezinski, sitting there having coffee while Mika keeps trying to make points about what this issue's about. And what's his name? Joe Scarborough sitting there with his hands, his arms crossed across his chest, more or less telling Tamika to shut her mouth. And I'm thinking to myself, son of a bitch, I wonder which one of them is making more money. I wonder which one of them, MSNBC figures, is really in control. But there's Mika being figuratively smacked around on the set, and the other three men sitting on the set while Scarborough does his ridiculous little song and dance, they're just quiet. Not a single goddamn one of them would come to Mika's defense. But so what? I mean, it's just entertainment. So what? So what? So, Huffington Post says the full extent of the fallout from Aiken's comments is still difficult to determine because calls for his withdrawal from the race only started yesterday. But once Romney and Ryan have a chance to read these polls, they're going to shut up. They're going to STFU because they know. They know that the media will find something new to chew on within hours, if not a couple of days. Okay, a couple of days, but, you know, this will fade. And it's not going to be anything of substance. So while we are desperate for information, we get this garbage from our news media. While we are desperate for something on the evening news other than nice, great, big, colorful pictures of the state of Washington on fire or the state of Colorado on fire. You know, is that news? Well, only if it's put in context, which it never is. Now, somebody suggested something to me, and it's very clear. American women could make this election the end of these fanatical religious right Republican neo-fascists. Very simple. It's borrowed from Lysistrata, but all women have to do is tell their husbands and boyfriends that if a woman-hating Republican wins a Senate seat, a representative seat, a governor, or becomes president, no more sex anytime soon. You know, respect the rights of women or you pay the consequences. Now, is that sexist? Of course it is. Of course it is. But that's where we live. Are you kidding me? That's where we live. Now, it would require Republican women or conservative women or Christian women to make that statement. That's why it's not going to happen. In ancient Greece, the women could band together. Well, at least in the mythology. And just tell their men, if you don't stop the wars between, you know, the city-states, if you don't stop the killing, if you don't stop the slavery, if you don't stop the slaughter, no more sex. Now, it was written as a comedy. But the point of Lysistrata 3,000 years ago was to point out the biological power of women in a very primitive way. The sad part is, all of that is still extant today. We'll be right back.
The fingerprints, that's what that old army post was for. Well, the sun gets bloody and the sun goes down, ever since the watermelon, and the lights come up on the black pit town. Somebody said, what's a better thing to do? Well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all.
Before the hour. So that's the best answer I can come up with about, you know, why I'm, or have up till tonight, continued to focus on this miserable twit, Todd Akin. It's just representative of the entire Republican Christian Fascist Party. If you're a Republican, you agree with Todd Akin, period. If you're a Republican voter, you do exactly what you're goddamn told to do. Not what you think might be best for your family, your city, your state, your country, your planet. No, 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 no. You suppress all that and you do exactly what either this filthy pig man, Rush Limbaugh, or the psycho Glenn Beck, or your state Republican Party chairperson, or your candidate for president, or your priest, or your preacher, you do exactamento what you are exactly told to exactly do. There is no deviation. You are a robot. Once you become a religious fanatic Republican right-winger, your ability to think, to reason, to logic, to enjoy, to appreciate, to use critical thinking, to honor, to respect, all of that is sucked out of you. And what is replaced, or what replaces it, is a program, and it is a program as surely as anything that runs around naked inside your computer, a program that dictates your reactions, dictates your direction, dictates how you're going to vote, how you're going to think. It dictates every little piece of your life. And along with that program comes the full understanding that any deviation will be met with furious disapproval. And even if your spirit, what's left of your real spirit, says to you, whispers to you, this is not right, it is instantly crushed. I feel sorry for right-wing Christian Republican teabag freaks. I feel sorry for you because the trade-off for this kind of faux security that you think you're feeling, the trade-off is your very mind, the very essence of you. You are nothing without your mind. Nothing. And your political, religious fascism wants to murder your mind. And for some of you, it's already dead. So I pity you. I pity you, your miserable little lives. And I know you run around with these smiles pasted on your face. But every single one of you is terrified of what's waiting for you. You're just terrified that you somehow you didn't cross the proper T or dot the proper I. And when you die, you're going to hell. You live with that 24/7. I don't care how many times you say it. Oh, I'm forgiven. Oh, God loves me. No, he doesn't. He hates your ass, and you know it. That's why you're so afraid. Well, at least that's your fear. I don't think Achan should be forgiven. Saw another message that says, no, I won't forgive you. I still want you to run so the whole country can really see what the GOP baggers are truly about and what is really in their souls, such as their deep hatred for women, minorities, and anyone other than themselves and their corporate sponsors. That is so true. Stay in the race, Todd. Don't let these the pressure from the media force you out. Just look at your polls, old buddy. Stay in the race. Jesus wants you to do this. You know it. Your constituents, your would-be constituents, they know it. The voters, the fascist voters in the state of Missouri, they know it. They know that Jesus is very pleased with you. Just like he's very pleased with the Republicans who peed and jumped around in the holy water of the Sea of Galilee and vomited and were drunk and God knows what else went on with their staffers or their boyfriends or their girlfriends or a little bit of each. I mean, Jesus loves you no matter what you do. So as far as Achan is concerned, pish tush, don't worry about it. You Republicans, just go ahead and vote for these candidates. This is what you are instructed to do. This is what you must do. This is the poison you have to drink and eat and take into your body and your soul and your mind. But you're safe. You're safe from that great whirring machine that's waiting for you when you die, the one that's going to send you straight to hell. Where demons, devils, oh my God! If this is the trade-off to live a life that is not only unrealized, but just crap, if that's the trade-off, you're more than willing to do it, aren't you? Because you don't want that whirring machine to suck you into hell. Wow. What a way to live your life. Well, whatever fits, right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is a referral.